Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is a very important exercise, particularly at this time, Mr. Speaker, when there is a need for us as a people to make up our minds about the direction in which our country is heading. I listened to the budget presented by the Honorable Prime Minister, and it confirms that this government has lost its way. That it's shooting in the dark, and that 5 more years of this government will take us another 2 decades or more to recover. And Mr. Speaker, after 8 years of this government, judging our performance by comparing us with people who are worse than us, who are performing worse than us. I have not even started, because they're getting so excited. I will address that. After 8 years of comparing us, of judging our performance by comparing us with people who are worse than us, Mr. Speaker, thus lowering the benchmark, the Prime Minister is now coming to say we must not accept half measures. We must have world-class standards. All of a sudden, after 8 years, because an election is on the horizon, suddenly there must be no half measures. Yes. When that is what has been practiced throughout. I was there.
Where were you?
I am now, Mr. Speaker, approximately. I am now 1 year and 2 months in opposition, approximately. And I have had a lot of time to reflect. Not that I did not have much call for reflection while I was in government. Indeed, I was in a state of continued reflection. Especially after the 2001 elections in this government's second term. This is when I became sure in my mind that I was on the wrong train. That the Labour government led by Kenny Anthony, Mr. Speaker, could only go so far as the rainbow's edge and no further. Mr. Speaker, I began to see that this government doesn't really care about people. They see them as votes. Not as unique individuals, each one important with a purpose to be fulfilled, and the role of leaders to help each one realize his goals and aspirations, but as numbers and votes. That their real motive is to stay in power at all costs, and the costs have been high. That they are not really interested in actually solving problems, but will do only just enough to get re-elected. Case in point, the year of the child. Recently described by one reporter as a farce and probably one of the biggest scams this government has put on the people of Kenosha. I will come to that. Wasteful spending with no lasting results in every sector, lack of strategic investment. Their projects are like a puff of smoke. The smoke screen evaporates and the void is exposed. Yeah. Cosmetic. Yeah. Words mean nothing to them, Mr. Speaker. Almost everything they say has a double meaning. So a guarantee is not a guarantee. A repeal is not a repeal. Look at the recent situation with the criminal code, Mr. Speaker. When they destroy the banana industry, they call it structural adjustment of the economy. When they recklessly borrow and destroy the prudent debt ratios, they call it prime pumping the economy. When the economy falls by 4.5% in 2001, it's called negative growth. Prostitution, they call it adult entertainment. And of course, the most duplicitous one, When they kill the preborn, they call it termination of pregnancy. Soon they will have another name for child abuse. They'll call it infantile excess. That's what characterizes this government. They have demonstrated a lack of political will. They will see a problem and try to go around it or ignore it completely, allowing it to fester, and will deal with it only when it becomes a political issue affecting their chance of re-election. That is why our murder rate, Mr. Speaker, has gone up to that extent. 8 years and our children are at risk. Still on the streets with no home. Is it because children do not vote? Suddenly, after 8 years, they realize that dysfunctional families, and I don't like that word, I think it's a labeling, are a source of crime. Yet, when you look in the budget, there is nothing done to address what they have finally seen is a source of crime. They are petty, thin-skinned and vindictive. They take criticism personally and have displayed an arrogance in dealing with the people of the nation. And you saw an example of that right here in this Honorable House a few minutes ago. The people of St. Lucia are expressing their views about the NCS scandal that is so unacceptable, and the recent allegations made in the press about the minister, which I think she ought to answer. And the minister is more or less saying that people are wasting their time and are discussing things that are irrelevant. I will come to that later. I'm not there yet. Mr. Speaker, as I said, their projects are like a puff of smoke. True, they've built a $15 million prison, but with almost no skills training. Under 20% of the 500-odd prisoners there are engaged in doing anything during the day. Under 20%. No rehab at all. It's a jail, not a correctional facility. And now they're talking about establishing a special drug court. I will come to that later too. Because my sources in Canada have revealed that the Prime Minister said that Canadians would come down to assist us, that this particular endeavor has a low rate of success in Canada. So why is it coming here? After 8 years, health is still a major concern. But St. Jude's greatly underfunded and the quality of services plummeting. Recently there was a threat of industrial action. The waiting times at Victoria Hospital, which under my watch as Minister, of Health, we reduced to 45 minutes, it's now back to 8 hours. And that should be proven because I myself sat there one day to see what it was like. That is what happens every day. And you should hear the people complain. We had resolved that. I don't like to boast about myself. But under my watch as Minister of Health with my staff, we had resolved that issue. The Minister of Health, who is still in the Labour government, ought to have at least consolidated and built on this gain. That's what you all say your theme is. But you have destroyed it in addition to other things. I understand that even the little beauty clinic that we went out to raise money, we used our golden fund and we raised $250,000. The people of St. Lucia and I led that campaign to raise that money. We engaged in some rehab programs at the Golden Oak Hospital, Mr. Speaker.
Honorable members, I remind you of Standing Order 40. A member present in the House during a debate shall maintain silence while another member is speaking and shall not interrupt, except in accordance with these standing orders, and shall otherwise conduct himself in a fit and proper manner. Honourable members, please allow the member for Kashmir Central to make a contribution. Thank you. Please proceed.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, they want me to lose my train of thought. Mr. Speaker, we raised $250,000 and there were lots of programs, and everyone will tell you that during my tenure as Minister of Health, mental health was on the front burner. the little beauty clinic we had, giving the patients a little personal care to enable them to feel good about themselves, to even want to feel like taking their medication, to even want to feel like participating in rehab programs. You know, they closed the beauty clinic. Recently, I understand that it's closed. After I left as minister, Mr. Speaker, not one effort I understand was made to put supplies in there so that the persons in there who were fully trained, they were trained for 1 year as cosmetologists to provide personal care to the patients, and they did that on an ongoing basis daily. When the supplies that I left there finished, they didn't bother even. I begged for these supplies. They were not bought by the ministry. And I am sure the people of Sinusha would be happy to donate supplies in huge quantities. So I'm asking the minister to reopen that beauty clinic, and I am giving the undertaking that I will lead a drive to successfully get supplies to ensure that that clinic can remain open.
Yes.
The minister is in your unemployment, Mr. Speaker. Unemployment for 2004 is higher than when the government took office in 1997. But I noticed that we were not even given an indication of what the unemployment figures was in the budget. The debt to GDP ratios, Mr. Speaker, 69.6%. As the member from Mikud North says, farmer confidence has been destroyed. They try nothing here, they try nothing there. And now there's a sudden recognition that the Ministry of Agriculture has failed in diversification, so they come in with another agency, SLADR, getting more money now to put in there, and who says that it will be successful? The crime per capita, St. Lucia is increasingly becoming one of the world's hotspots for murders. Education system is failing our youth. We're talking about ensuring universal secondary education. I agree with that. But they're talking in terms of quantity, not quality. The school system is a stressful environment for both teaching and learning. Violence is a major issue in schools. Again, cosmetics and overall decrease in our quality of life. St. Lucians are living in a pressure cooker. A housewife visit to a supermarket is a stressful exercise. You have to decide whether you can get oil, whether you should choose vinegar as opposed to oil. Basic food items, Mr. Speaker, $500 in a supermarket cannot buy basic items to last 2 weeks. Mr. Speaker, in a household of four, basic items to ensure good nutrition for the students who now have access to secondary schools. Women and youth are particularly affected. Women are seeing their children gone down. Mothers see that their children cannot get jobs when graduated out of school, even when they have university degrees. Yeah. They get home from work, there's no water in their pipes. The stress on families trying to meet ends financially, Mr. Speaker, can send somebody crazy.
You'll
have to come back to this. And then government is talking about, and now government is talking about dysfunctional families. This government is creating dysfunctional families. We look for hope in this budget, but we still at the edge of the rainbow. We have not moved yet. We still can't get a pot of gold. In my opinion, the budget is uninspiring. It is as though this government has said they accuse us of too much borrowing, we might as well just borrow, splash it around. We have an election to win anyway. And if we lose, we don't have the trouble of paying the debt. The Prime Minister and Minister of Finance will be remembered for one thing, by the younger generation, that he has mortgaged their futures. There was no need to write a book. Future generations will remember this Prime Minister. But this budget, I say, is a sequel to the book. Because this budget is a rainbow of promises. Like a rainbow, the closer you examine the budget, the further away the truth disappears. Hundreds of millions of dollars of massive destructive borrowings are the glittering colors of this budgetary rainbow. And the promises of reduced crime, reduced unemployment, improvement in the structural framework of our economy, confidence in our future, are the proverbial gold coins in the pot at the end of the rainbow, which we will never reach. And Mr. Speaker, like the member from Equinox, I want to say that they want to use the World Cup as if it's going to change everything. I have gone on record in this House in expressing my unswerving support for our participation in the Cricket in World Cup. And in the last budget, I suggested that the use of cruise ships could be used as temporary accommodation sites during the short period of the World Cup. Mr. Speaker, I will not stand by while this government uses this wonderful opportunity as a cover-up, as merely a spin-doctoring exercise for its past and continued failings. So now the Prime Minister says, as of now, we must be a world-class destination. So I suppose he wants to tell the electorate that we will do things differently now. After 8 years, we will do things differently, and we're now going to spend just under $1 billion. So because we're spending, it means we are doing. Let's take a closer look, Mr. Speaker, at the budget. With the capital project loans expected borrowing of EC $257.9 million, Mr. Speaker. To fund this budget, the Minister of Finance will have raised our national debt by close to EC $500 million in 3 years. In 2003, we saw a 13.3% increase to EC $145.4 million, and in 2004, we've seen a 16.6% increase to EC $205.1 million. A 400% increase in interest payments, Mr. Speaker, from EC 16.6 million in 1997 to EC 64.25 million in 2004. Isn't that astounding? And then, Mr. Speaker, we cannot see the result. That is the problem. We cannot see the result. Mr. Speaker, we know the fundamental issues facing the economy at this particular time, an unbalanced economy, where we are too heavily dependent on tourism. I was glad to hear the Prime Minister accept that in his budget presentation, where he says, whereas we had to build tourism, now we realize, almost as if that's how it came out, now we suddenly realize that we need to build linkages between agriculture and tourism because we cannot depend too heavily on one product. But he didn't say how those linkages were going to be created. He only referred to the other agency that he's going to form, that he's going to put so many million dollars in, to now look over agricultural diversification. But we've had so many agencies who've just wasted money and not achieved the objective. So how are we sure in this budget that he's going to do it, when after 8 years he has not been able to successfully do it? Mr. Speaker, the government has an inability to effectively implement programs and ensure that benefits accrue from the expenditures that are initiated. Crime is a case in point. One of these days, in fact, in the Prime Minister's rebuttal, I would like the Prime Minister to tell us how much money he has spent on crime ever since this government took office. Mr. Speaker, I want to talk a little bit about economic growth. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister said that he was happy to report economic growth of 3.6%. Mr. Speaker, I am not delighted by 3.6% economic growth. I am disturbed by it. Insert Dwight Benner's message, Mr. Speaker, in January 2005. No, 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 not that one. No. Mr. Speaker. I have it here. When he spoke about the ECCU economy in 2004 and prospects for 2005 and beyond, he said, Mr. Speaker, that what our governments require in order to improve our quality of life in our OECD countries is a consistent level of real growth at 6%.
Yes.
So I don't want the Prime Minister to come and say how delighted he is after 8 years, or to boast of economic growth at a rate of 3.6%. Unless, and I'm quoting from Sir Dwight Benner, the achievement of a consistent level of real growth at the 6% level will be critical for increasing income levels, lowering employment, and reducing poverty. So if after two terms in office, the Minister of Finance will come and say he's delighted at a 3.6% economic growth when our unemployment levels have risen since he took office in 1997, then the Prime Minister is accepting half measures, and I think quarter measures. Mr. Speaker, I note that even for the period in question, the average growth rate in the OECD was 4.1%, so we didn't even reach the average growth rate in the OECD, which is a 4.1%. But yet the Prime Minister is delighted to have achieved his 3.6% growth. The average in the OECD was 4.1%. And that counts Dominica and Grenada. We know that Dominica had to subject itself to the IMF, and Grenada had to deal with the scourges of Ivan. Grenada's growth rate was 5% before Ivan. We used to be one of the leading countries in terms of development. We will come to that. So the Prime Minister cannot come and talk about how delighted he is because of the 3.6% growth rate. And further, Mr. Speaker, further, I wish to quote the Prime Minister in his supplementary budget proposals for 1997-98, where he said, oh, the Prime Minister left. Well, I'm after his job, so he might as well leave. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister said that he is
honorable member.
And I'm quoting from the budget of 1997-98, the supplementary budget, that the intention was, or the goal was, to establish the conditions that would allow for annual growth of at least 5% to be generated. We do not have everybody suffers from oil prices, all of the OECD, not just St. Lucia. We do not have complete control over the growth rate, but we can create some of the conditions that would facilitate economic expansion. So the Prime Minister has missed his target, Mr. Speaker. The average growth rate from the time this government took in office is a paltry 1.25% per annum, which misses the annual 5% target set by the Prime Minister by 75%. By his own standards, he has failed.
Yes.
It is also interesting to note, and somehow, I don't know how, but figures keep changing in these budgets. They quote one figure this year, then you see another figure coming up, then you see another one coming up. Preparing for this budget is like going through a minefield. And I would like to suggest, Mr. Speaker, that in keeping with the rules of this House, that when bills are to be debated in this Honorable House, that as a general rule, members get 4 clear days to peruse these bills. We get an estimate of expenditure 2 or 3 days before budget. We get the Prime Minister's speech, and we have 1 day to prepare. And we cannot trust the figures in there because we don't get the unemployment figures.
Yeah.
When we look at the growth rate, we see it's different from what was published before. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, so I would like to suggest that in keeping with the rules of the House, that members get their bills 4 clear days. 4 clear days before the proceeding. Anyway, it is also interesting to note that since April 2004, that's 1 year ago, when the Prime Minister boasted a growth of 3.71%, and we could find that from the Statistics Department, that is the growth that was recorded there, that it took him 1 year until one of his March 2005 addresses to the nation to say to St. Lucia that in fact the economy grew by only 2.9%. And I have, Mr. Speaker, I have that address to the nation right here. So in 1 year, in the budget we had 3.71, and in the year after we had, wasn't 3.71, it was 2.9. I'm not suggesting that the Prime Minister deliberately misled the people of St. Lucia, but I am simply saying that more care should be taken in providing these figures. Because that is critical information that the people of St. Lucia need to assess the performance of this government. And further, Mr. Speaker, in fact, in March, he actually said 3%, when the economic report which we received a few days ago now says 2.9%. So we have to go looking all over the place like a minefield. They want to badger us, Mr. Speaker, when these figures are so critical to determine the performance of the government. You constantly hear about 911 as the excuse for the poor performance. But 1 year before 9/11, the economy had already tanked and recorded negative growth of -0.5% in 2000. He would have thought with all the massive borrowing and spending, which they call prime pumping, that last year we would have gone on from the 2.9 growth of 2003 and reached at least the 5% that he promised since 1997. Instead, the growth rate barely climbed to 3.6. And based on the unreliability of the figures, we may well hear that it's something else by the time the budget comes around next year. Mr. Speaker, I want to turn to, in discussing the economy, unemployment. Okay. Mr. Speaker, I mean, I will say this even before I come to talk about my constituency. Because 99%, I have not assessed it scientifically, but I can certainly say 9 out of 10 people who come to me come to say they want a job.
That's why they're hiding the figures.
Mr. Speaker, and I again want to read from the Prime Minister's budget statement of 97-98. The most important objective of the government in the short term is to tackle the horrendous unemployment and underemployment problems with which this government has inherited. Unemployment is a scourge. That's the Prime Minister talking, not me, for now. Unemployment is a scourge. It dehumanizes people. It undermines family life. It destroys self-worth and confidence. The government is conscious of the fact that the exact unemployment rate in St. Lucia has never been authoritatively determined. This state of affairs cannot be allowed to continue. Some have put the unemployment rate at 22%, others at 25%, and most recently, in April 1997, at 29%. That's the Prime Minister speaking in 1997. A government should be in a position to state the unemployment rate at any one time and show what action it has taken to reduce the incidence of unemployment. This index is too important to leave to speculation. A government that insists on accountability should never be afraid to subject citizens to the political scrutiny of those who empower them to govern.
That's right.
Mr. Prime Minister, but yet still, unemployment today is at 21% and he did not even give us that critical information we need, according to what he himself said, in order to judge the government's performance. I think that should say a lot to State Lucians. But we have dedicated members of the opposition who will take the responsibility entrusted to us by the people of St. Lucia to represent them, and we will go where we have to go to find information. And I heard the member for Castry South sympathizing with the Prime Minister because he didn't see him this morning because he had to sleep wherever, because he had to sleep for 3 hours because he was so tired. What about us who just got a budget and we had only one day to prepare? And we have to go searching all over the place for information. We haven't slept yet, but we don't mind losing sleep in order to properly represent the people. So, Mr. Speaker, so, according to the Statistical Department in 1997, as I said, the unemployment rate in St. Lucia stood at 20.5, or approximately 14,400 persons. When we look at the unemployment rate recorded for the whole of 2004, we find it at 21% higher. Although the Prime Minister made a promise to deal with the horrendous unemployment situation in 1997, he borrowed so much and thrown so much at all kinds of different projects, the steps, the this, the that, the what have you and what have you, and our employment rate today is higher after 8 years. Isn't that an indictment on the Minister of Finance and his advisors? And I don't exclude the responsibility of the member for Castry East. I know he acts as one of the Prime Minister's chief advisors on economics. So they all have to account for this, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, imagine now we have 2,163 more persons unemployed, merely youth, today than we had in 1997. This is the government whose leader said in the same 1997 supplementary budget address that for the medium term he wanted to, and I quote, reduce employment levels by no less than 2 percentage points per annum. Because if the Minister of Finance had dropped unemployment by 2 percentage points per annum, starting from 1999, I'm giving them a whole year clear, which would be in the medium term, then unemployment in 2004 should have been at the level of 6 to 8%. After 7 years in government, it's 8 now. The Prime Minister and his team have missed their target by no less than 300%. Mr. Speaker, in the 1998-99 budget address, the Prime Minister proudly boasted that government has already created 1,700 jobs by the state program. Mr. Speaker, I gather that throughout the period of this short-term project, the unemployment figure would have been calculated with the persons on the STEP program being counted as employed for part of the period. There was no STEP program in 1994 or 95 or 96, when the jobless rate was calculated for these years, yet unemployment was still lower on average than during the period of this administration when the STEP program has been in existence. I think that gives us an idea. Mr. Speaker, I have the Barbados nation. Mr. Speaker, I have the Barbados nation. And I wish to quote from it, because Barbados now has an unemployment rate which is a mere 8.7%. It is possible, but you need to have a government that is competent.
Yes, I agree.
And I'm quoting from the Barbados Nation, the Daily Nation, of Friday, March 11th. During the last quarter of 2004, figures produced by the Statistical Services show that the unemployment rate stood at a mere 8.7%. This is the lowest quarterly figure ever and speaks volumes of this Barbados Labour Party's administration's economic priorities and programs for Barbados. It brings to mind our bold 1994 election promise when we told this nation that jobs is priority number one. Maybe the Prime Minister can go over to Barbados and get some ideas from his counterpart as to how a government can go about keeping its promises with regard to unemployment. Mr. Speaker, I want to quote from a book written by Wendell King, A Tribute to Sartre Lewis, in which he refers to an address that Sir Arthur Lewis gave, the 1971 presidential address to the Board of Governors, challenging the powers that be in the West Indies to find a solution to the growing unemployment among the West Indian youth. And these were Sir Arthur Lewis's words: "No one of us deserves happiness while this condition lasts." So it is not good enough to say that you have STEP and that you are helping out the school folks. People want their confidence increased. While it's good to help for a period of time, people want to be able to stand on their own feet. They want an opportunity to work, to earn a living, to feel that they are empowered and are in control of their lives. This is what a government ought to be about, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to turn now to what perhaps worries me more than anything else about this budget. Mr. Speaker, the debt. The increasing debt, and I refer to it briefly, the increasing debt that this government is placing on the backs of St. Lucians and future generations. Mr. Speaker, this year's estimates compared with last year's have gone up by 24.12%. An unprecedented, Mr. Speaker, increase in over $185 million. The capital program alone is being financed by over $257 million in loans. Have we gone crazy, Mr. Speaker? We have heard about election budgets, and we all expected moderate, if not bigger increases. But never in the history of this country has anyone been so brazen to completely throw caution to the wind and hope to block the people completely prior to elections. And you know, they tell us that this is a billion-dollar economy, so we can borrow $1 billion. So if you have a house worth $500, you're supposed to mortgage it for the entire £500 loan and not have a dollar in equity. That's what they are suggesting. Mr. Speaker, in 3 years, the Prime Minister of this country has increased the debt to $81.437 million by the following increments in the past 2 years. 2003, 13.3% increase. EC, $145.4 million. And you can find these figures in the 2003-2004 Economic Review. 2004, 16.6% increase, or EC, $205.1 million, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, when people talk about the National Conservation Authority, I suppose they're saying it's only about $5 million we have, or this is no big money. But it's the principle. I would not give this Prime Minister $1,000 of my money to me.
You call it stewardship.
I would not give this Minister of Finance $1,000 of my money for me. It's as simple as that. Because you're a family, you all think I'm poor. No way. Because you're a family, you all think I'm poor. I'm well taken care of. Mr. Speaker, I would not give this Prime Minister $1,000 to spend for me. Again, let's look at the reliability of the figures. Why change in 2003, debt figures down from EC 1,237 million, quoted in the 2003 Economic Review, to EC 1,232 million dollars quoted in the 2004 Economic Review, a change of EC 5.2 million. Where does it say total? The 2003 Economic Review presented to the House in 2004 quoted 66% as the debt-GDP ratio. Dr. Anthony, in March 2005, in his address to the nation, quoted 62.8%. And the 2004 Economic Review presented to this House Assembly just a few days ago quoted 63.8. Now you might think it's a little difference in figures, but we know that when we're dealing with figures, we have to account for every cent. So in 2003 Economic Review, 66%. That's the debt to in the address to the nation on March 2005, 62.8. In the 204 Economic Review, 60.8. All different kinds of figures. We have spoken about the erosion of the debt to GDP ratios. We've spoken about it. Mr. Speaker, I am also extremely concerned about interest payments on these debts, because these have to be met on a yearly basis, Mr. Speaker. It is a figure that impacts very immediately and in the short term on government finances, and clearly indicates how far down the slippery slope we are. This is the level of interest payments we pay on the increasing debt being incurred by the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, I will not go through all of it because of time. But I wish to say that if we look at the Economic Review for 2004, it will show that our interest payments have increased by 400.1% since the 1997-98 period. So this government's policy is just let's borrow, let's spend. Let's borrow, let's spend. You ask them what they're doing about crime, they tell you how much they're spending. This Prime Minister, in this budget, seeing that the people of St. Lucia live in fear, should take each of the initiatives that his government has initiated on crime, say how much money they've spent,
Honourable members of the opposition, I'm having difficulty in listening and hearing the honourable member for Caspi Central. There should be one meeting going on. Thank you. Please proceed, honourable member.
Yes. Well, Speaker, that means that every month, before we do anything, we have to file EC $5.3 million to pay interest before we do anything else. Every month.
Yeah.
What a record of waste.
The honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make her contribution.
Speaker, I would like to invoke Standing Order 32.10 to ask that the honourable member for Central Castries be allowed another 45 minutes to complete another hour to complete her presentation.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 32, Sub-Order 10, be suspended to allow the honourable member for Castries Central an additional 1 hour to make her contribution. I now put the question. As many who are of that opinion say aye. As many who are of a contrary opinion say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Leave it granted, honourable member.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, time surely passes very quickly, so there's quite a bit more that I wish to talk about, so I will quickly wrap up on the economy. But I want to say a little bit about, I have more to say on debt dispute and the interest payment, because I noticed, Mr. Speaker, and that is something that I would like the Honourable Prime Minister to clarify. I must say this one. I noticed, Mr. Speaker, that if you look at the estimates of expenditure on page 272, under the head, Office of the Director of Finance, we would note that in the estimates for 2005-2006, it is noted. No, sorry, Mr. Speaker, let me go back. From the 204-205 estimate, from the head item, that's page 272, 204-205, the head item, Office of the Director of Finance, the loan repayment and expenses is 20,946,009 cents. That is what was budgeted for that item, loan repayment and expenses, and the sinking fund contributions was 17,943.6. That is what was budgeted. I note, however, that in the estimates for 2005-2006, which are before us now, page 277, that the following figures are given as the revised amount spent in these areas. Loan repayment and expenses, zero. Sinking fund contributions, zero, suggesting that no payments were made, suggesting that although the House approved a total of $38.8 million in order to facilitate loan repayment and expenses and the sinking fund contributions, that in fact, according to the estimates we have before us, $0 were paid in these particular head items. So, is it an error? I can't imagine that such a great error would be made. The Prime Minister, I would ask, indicate to us the 2004-2005 estimate, page 272. Do you have the previous year? Right, 272. I have my copy. You can borrow if you wish. And the 2005-2006, this one we have before us, indicates that nothing was paid. So is it a case where we cannot even meet our debt payments and we yet be borrowing more? And a sinking fund where we're supposed to be putting money aside to pay later, we cannot even put money aside to pay, to honor our debt later. Are we in effect already beginning to default on debt? are the ECCB, the World Bank, and the IMF aware of this? I think that needs to be clarified. But still, I will move on. Because I suspect that if I were to ask for another hour, I will. So I need to move on. Mr. Speaker, in the Prime Minister's talk with the nation in March 2005, the Prime Minister sought to give an explanation for this exorbitant increase in our national debt. Why the increase in debt? That's, I'm quoting the Prime Minister. Why then has the public debt grown over the years? There are several reasons. Here are some. Firstly, the amount of aid and grants which the nation receives have steadily declined over the years. St. Lucia has had to replace the loss by borrowing to finance its development. That's true. The figures do not bear that out. The figures do not. The figures tell a different story. Look at it. Look at it. Look at the estimates of expenditure. Sorry, look at the economic review for 2003. Page 57. Members can look. The 2003 economic review. I also have it if you wish to borrow it. It lists the central government revenue from capital grants, and it's listed from 1994-95 right down to this current year, what we expect to receive in this estimate, Mr. Speaker. And it shows clearly, I won't go through the figures, it shows clearly that we are receiving more grant funding now. You're talking about this year, but I'm talking about over the years. That's what I'm talking about. I am talking about, you want me to quote the figures? There's an average, Mr. Speaker, before this government came into power from 94, 95 to 96, 97, there was an average of 18.64 million. This government, Mr. Speaker, has an average of 43.72 million, Mr. Speaker, and the figures are there to show. Grant funding has not depleted as this government wants to give us the impression it has to provide an excuse for this massive borrowing. What will our friends say who are giving us this money? The friends, the Chinese, the Americans, the British, the European Union, they are giving us grant funding and we're saying that we're not receiving it. That's what is happening. And the statistics are there to show, Mr. Speaker. I'm not going to allow them to lead me to waste my time to argue. The facts are there. I would like to speak about crime. Because never before in the history of St. Lucia have our citizens lived in so much fear. And this budget is noticeably silent on crime. Is this an indication that this government has nothing more to offer? Or are they just going to wait and see what happens and hope for the best? And the fear that our people experience is not unfounded fear. It's true, the statistics will show that as a general rule, the crimes reported have gone down as a general rule. But the more serious crimes have gone up, like murder and rape.
And robbery.
Mr. Speaker, there is no hope on the horizon. Our children are exposed to violence at an early age, themselves engaging in serious crimes at a tender age. Just this week we heard of a teenager holding a gun to a 10-year-old's head. And now the government is passing the buck. It's now saying, oh, the Prime Minister says that he's tired of telling the police commissioner to put more men on the beat. But you know, the civil servants cannot come and give their responses. Because you know what will happen if they speak. I mean, ministers get fired, far less. The civil servant, the commissioner of police, and all his senior officers, they cannot defend themselves. They cannot come and say anything. They can't say, well, I asked you for this, where we have no gas in our vehicles. Well, they can't say that. So the government can say whatever they like, can pass the buck, put the blame on the police. And the police can say nothing. Now they put the blame on citizens. All of us have to, of course we do, but you have to lead. You have to provide the framework. You have to provide the atmosphere. That's why we elected you. And then you say that we must stop playing politics with crime. Everything is politics. Everything is politics. Because when this government put all its promises in these documents, it wasn't politics. So because you have not achieved what you said you would, now it's not politics. But that will be one of the major political issues in this election. So you better get it right. So, let us look at the statistics very quickly. Number of reports have gone on, but the fact is, murder up. In 2001, you had 24. 2004, 38. Already. Don't tell me England is worse. There are no half measures. That is what your Prime Minister has told you to use as your guiding motto. Your Speaker, attempted murder is down because nowadays they're not bothering to attempt to kill you, they're just killing you. So that's up. Oh, nowadays they're not waiting round the corner. To ambush you. You know, they're coming up straight to you in broad daylight, anywhere, anytime, and shooting you. So attempted murder is down, but murder is up. Mr. Speaker, so many people now just do not even bother to report crimes. Recently, Pandey in Trinidad lamented the issue of Trinidad's murder rate and put Trinidad as the fifth most dangerous state in the world to live. Now, yes, that's what he said. St. Lucia, I would suggest if we don't do something about this crime, we'll reach that figure. Now, they will tell you it's happening everywhere, but that is not true. Let us not practice mediocrity and look at examples that we can emulate. Fact is, Mayor Rudy Giuliani in New York. Yes, because it's one of the cities in the world. It's one of the places in the world where persons know had a very high crime rate. Under his watch, the murder rate in New York plummeted by 70%. Yes, and I want to refer you to the front page magazine of January 3, 2002. It is possible. And if you go there, you will see some of the kinds of measures that can be enforced to ensure that there is, in fact, a reduction in crime. There's been so much money spent, so many initiatives at tremendous cost. National Crime Commission, campaign against drug abuse, new prison, new police station, setting up new programs all over the place. Now I hear about a drug court coming. A drug treatment court. Dior Soran had to come and tell us that we were living in fear. As if we didn't know that. Dior Soran had to come to tell us that we were just to come and tell us, yes, you're not living in fear. As if we didn't know that. Mr. Speaker, all these initiatives, increasing the police force, we have to ask ourselves, an increase, is there an actual increase in capacity? Because you trained, the Commissioner of Police was on TV recently enough, indicating how many police officers leave the force, negating even the amount that are added to the force. And of course, when you have officers leaving, you have in many cases experienced officers leaving, and of course you have new recruits joining. So we have to ask ourselves if there's a real increase in capacity. Of course, they boast about the provision of 24 new motorcycles, 21 new motor vehicles. These were put in 1998. They were put to replace the existing fleet. What is the actual strength? Are they working? Do they have pilots? Do they have fuel? That is a big problem. All this was supposed to have resulted, these and other initiatives were supposed to have resulted in taking back the streets and restoring public confidence. That was the PM speech on June 20, 2001. It has not happened. The detection rates are low. Detection rates for crimes as a general rule are low, Mr. Speaker. So you're wondering what all of this investment is doing. I'm not putting blame on the police. Of course, we've said so often that in as much as they are good police officers, they are corrupt officers. But, Mr. Speaker, my information or my investigation has revealed that 85 to 90% of the police's budget is spent on emoluments, rent, and rent. They have little money to spend on operations and equipment to actually fight crime. Something has to be done about that. I was talking about the detection rates, Mr. Speaker. Look at rape. Detection rate, 17.95%. Rape. Out of 39 crimes reported, 39 crimes reported, 39 accepted, crime detected 7. The murder rate, Mr. Speaker, 37.5%. And when you look at the category of crimes against property, it's even worse. Stealing from person, 14.76%. Stealing generally, 11.82%. That's the detection rate we're talking about for the year 2001. Mr. Speaker, just to give you an idea, and I also have the statistics for 2003, 2002, Mr. Speaker. So we have to do something about that. That is what we call strategically investing. We have to look at why those detection rates are so low, and we must target our resources there. I didn't hear anything about the forensic services. Of course, that has an impact on detection rates. The Prime Minister didn't give any update. I understand that it is still in the planning stages. When for so long, there are persons who, on the strength of the promise of this government that it would ensure that a forensic lab was replaced, have gone overseas to study, have come back, they have degrees in forensic science, they're walking all about the place frustrated, no forensic lab. Still, doubling the Joseph case. I understand to date over $200,000 has been spent in sending samples here and there and there for just one case. I'm not saying that it's not important to spend it, because I certainly believe it's important to spend it to fight the killer of bullying the Joseph. But we could save ourselves all this wastage of resources by ensuring we put our shoulders to the wheel and do what we say we'll do for the people of Senusha. Morale, Mr. Speaker. I spoke about the acting of comments in senior ranks last year in this budget about the fact that there were 5 posts of Assistant Commissioner of Police and that only 2 were filled with acting appointments a whole year, same obtained. Morale instability. Keep the police officers' incentives. Demand from them, but give them incentives. The member from Mikut North spoke about the risks involved in the police officers' work. I don't need to regurgitate. But I want to say that a police officer, I understand, maybe the Minister of the Public Service can correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that a police officer shot in the line of duty gets the same compensation as a teacher gets if she's at home and suffers a heart attack. So how do we expect in these days when criminals can get the latest and the most dangerous weapons that police officers will risk their lives? Mr. Speaker, and as the member said, sometimes they have to go conduct raids in a ghetto, have the guns, conduct the raids, they have to go back and put the guns and then walk past the same ghetto to go home. nor rehab, as I said, in the prisons. And the Prime Minister has made so many speeches. He's asked to put the prisoners to give us a break for Christmas. That was so ludicrous. We have...
Speak up.
For purposes of clarification, Minister must, Member must withdraw that. I have never, ever made any such request to citizens anywhere. And she must withdraw it. Because it's been said outside, and I will not allow somebody in this house, given the integrity of this house, to repeat such an erroneous statement. I have never made any such statement. Contrary to what the media suggests and others in her field suggest.
Honourable Member for Castries Central.
Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, I will withdraw the statement.
Thank you.
I will withdraw.
Please proceed.
Yes. But I promise, because I do not have the source with me here, but I'm going to check it out. And if I find, it's my turn to speak, Mr. Prime Minister. If I find that the Prime Minister said something like this or similar, I will make it known, and I will make the source known to the people of Kenosha, because I am almost sure I heard it myself. Nonetheless, it is withdrawn. It is withdrawn. It is withdrawn. Good. Mr. Speaker, we have seen a number of ministers being given responsibility for this portfolio. In that New Year's speech where the Minister of Home Affairs was relieved of her responsibility. And mind you, as Minister of Home Affairs, I never had responsibility for the police. Huh? I just want to put that on record. Okay? This was the only Minister of Home Affairs to date who had not been given responsibility for the police. That me. Like, as a Minister for Home Affairs, I was never given responsibility for the police. So, we had the Honourable Member for Lavery. And then he was noted for his famous statement, "Leave my boys alone." And then I heard him talking about capital punishment. We had the former AG, Honorable Precious Compton, a complete joke to date. Although in the Prime Minister's 204 New Year address, one of the reasons he assigned this portfolio to the current minister was to provide more direct supervision and oversight to that department. And what have we seen? The crime rate keeps on going up. The criminal code fiasco is still unfolding. And Mr. Speaker, I really cannot talk about crime without talking about crimes against women in particular. Sex trafficking, and I call it crimes against women, because I call sex trafficking and sexual slavery and prostitution crimes against women. Have you ever heard this government talk about its concern about these crimes? To open a strip club nowadays is the fastest growing business, particularly in my constituency. It is clear government's tolerance of this fast growing crime is very clear. In some cases, government actually condones it. I have seen copies of work permits issued to these persons who come into Kenosha to prostitute themselves, issued by the Labour Department of this government. Mr. Speaker, I have seen it. Mr. Speaker, point of
order. Honourable
correction.
Elaborate.
I'm sure the Minister was informed of yesterday that no work permit had been issued to anyone as of June of last year with regard to this particular activity. And so she was informed yesterday by the Minister.
I said I have seen work permits. I didn't give the date. I said I have seen work permits. I said I have seen work permits. This government for the longest while condoned this activity. And of course, I spoke with the Labour Commissioner yesterday because I do my homework. I spoke with him. And yes, he told me. Because I've seen a work permit for April 2004. He said to me, since June, no work permits have been issued. So I said to him, Mr. Labour Commissioner, you stopped issuing work permits in June of 2004. Have you conducted any spot checks at these establishments to ensure that persons are in fact not engaging in employment illegal informing? No, he hasn't. But he knows for a fact that they're doing it. The government is condoning it. I am telling you now that the Labour Commissioner admitted, although no work permits have been issued, the activity continues to his knowledge, but no spot checks have been done. So the government in fact has made it easier, because now they don't have to pay for the work permit, but they're doing it anyway. Check that out. Do something about it. Do something about it and show the people of Sinucha that you are not serious about crime. Crime is a function of the mind.
Mr. Speaker, on a point of clarification, I'm quite sure that the Honourable and the member for Castle Central was informed again yesterday by the Labour Commissioner that at his department and the Immigration Department are working together in terms of addressing this problem.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know why the point of order was raised. He says they are working. I said they have not conducted a spot check. He's telling me they are working on it. How long are you all working on it? I said they have not conducted a spot check. Don't tell me he tells me they are working on it. Get it done. Stop doing it, but do it. I have a lot more to say on this, but I can't. But I want to say, I would like to say, that a government serious about crime. You know how prostitution starts? Surveys have shown over 70% of women who prostitute themselves have been victims of child abuse and rape. They are victims. And any good government that really cares about crime and cares about women and cares about whatever else they care about will not just prosecute these offences, ensure that they deal with it, but they will also provide services consisting of counselling, support, provide attractive employment opportunities for women who wish to leave prostitution. So, Mr. Speaker, very quickly, way forward on crime, because it's possible. Way forward. Put a lid on it. Get back the control. Restore the public confidence. More officers on the beat, more patrols in hot spots. Just in the CDC down there, Mr. Speaker, yards from the police station. Yes, I've been trying to get something done about this drug trafficking that openly goes on yards away from the police station. Just cannot happen under this government. Improve the morale of the police force. Ensure that more money goes into operations of the police force so they have the equipment and they're on the job. They have the equipment and they can do their work. The forensic lab, get it up and running. Look at the crimes that have a low detection rate, like the robbery, like the house breaking, like the stealing. Maybe it's time to look at an automated fingerprint system, because in these cases, I am informed that that is why there's a low detection rate. Increase the efficiency of the court, strengthen the arm of the DPP's office. I know that there's some initiatives being taken there, but there's a serious problem where you have police prosecutors prosecuting serious offences. They need to be trained. Mr. Speaker, we have a serious problem of gangs. A recent Mirror article suggested that there is a gang, an organized gang, in almost every suburban community. And other prisons, there's a serious problem with gangs. I am suggesting that there be a pilot project in the urban areas where a multidisciplinary team goes in to work with the youth on the block. It's not just good enough to put yes or yes. the youth sitting on the block need to be motivated to go to Yak or Yes or the skills training. That targets a particular set of youth. But the youth on the block, who before they wake up, they smoke a joint and they lethargic, they half and half, they're not going to be motivated to go and sit in a class to learn a skill. Just because I must remember. I wish to recall the parable of the Good Shepherd. And contrary to what persons may say or think, it is on very few occasions that I refer to the Bible in this honorable house. The parable of the Good Shepherd, Mr. Speaker, that we all probably know so well, says the Good Shepherd looks after his sheep. That if he has 100 sheep, and out of the 100 sheep, one is lost, he leaves the 99 and goes up and finds the one lost. That was Sunday sermon, very appropriate. That is what the parable of the Good Shepherd says. It is not enough for the Prime Minister as the leader of this country to just drop a Yes program, drop a Yak program, and expect that the youth on the block who are at risk, who are those most likely to turn to a life of crime because of their particular vulnerability, to just up themselves, get the drive, get the motivation, get the confidence, get the zeal to go. I am suggesting a pilot project where a multidisciplinary team goes and specifically targets youth on the block, and that there is an individual, there's a program for each one of these young people who are at risk.
Yeah.
And this is not impossible.
Yeah,
this is not, I'm saying that it's kind of project. So if you get 250 youth, say, in Central, I'm just pulling out the figure, and then you have a special program tailored. If it's drug intervention he needs, you pay for him to work on him, and he has a special plan. And you can build on your successes and what you learned. And even when youth in other communities see your successes, that can motivate the youth. It's not impossible. A good shepherd looks after the sheep that is lost, that needs that extra push that needs this extra hand. That needs to be done, Mr. Speaker. There's a lot more I can say about this, but that's in our master plan. Mr. Speaker, repeat offenders, recidivists, rehab programs. There should be psychological profiling at Bordelais. That hasn't started yet. The same multidisciplinary team I'm talking about. There should be a plan for each inmate in there that is scientific, that is prepared by trained psychologists and psychotherapists, what have you, to ensure that you go into the history, you understand whatever you need to do to know that this plan is the best plan tailored for this inmate. That is how you stop repeat offending. And there's so much, I could say, Mr. Speaker, and in terms of money for this, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Our existing institutions, our existing social structures, if we strengthen them, Turning Point is more than happy to do that. But you know, everyone who goes to Turning Point has to pay about $1,500 for the treatment. The last time, when I was at the ministry, that's certainly what the figure was. I don't know if this one up. They can't afford to pay, they don't get it. We have to take interest in people, Mrs. Speaker. And I could go on and on. I can talk about strengthening the probation services. I can talk about strengthening the Human Services Department. I am aware that request was made for a new initiative a couple of years, at least 2 years ago, for a child services unit to be set up. Where is that? Not even in the year of the child did this government seek fit to do that. And this year of the child, Mr. Speaker, I'm moving on. That is such a disappointment. From the time I heard the Prime Minister announce this year of the child, I knew it was a farce. Even while I was in the government, I knew it was a farce. Because in my mind, Because in my mind, that was a direct response to the Belinda Joseph murder. That was a direct response to the Belinda Joseph murder. Because the government knew that since Giselle George, it had done nothing, not even arrest, that the conditions were just not there to detect and solve this crime, not even an arrest to date. So the government felt backed in a corner, so they quickly announced the year of the child to make believe that they are serious. So much so that Belinda Joseph was murdered in December of 2002. The government quickly announced the year of the child, and it didn't start until the following November, because they did it in haste, and then they recognized that really, we can't really pull it off, so it had to start almost a year later. And I'm not just saying this, because I got a report on this activity from the Ministry of Health. The minister was kind enough to let me have it, because the minister, I noted anyway that you had promised a report to the nation. So you were very kind to let me have it. If you didn't, I would have asked you for it publicly. But thank you anyway. The report shows that this was a failure. The report shows, the minister is being accountable. The minister publicly promised the report to the nation. Publicly, he did so at the closing of the year of the child. I have to say, here, were you publicly? He did. And Mr. Speaker, this said, although, and I'm quoting from the report, which comes from the department, and it gives a list of the programs that were executed, that were not executed, blah, blah, blah. I can't do it for that. Although there were a number of committees to oversee various activities, there was a lack of planning and proper coordination, which resulted in poor publicity of activities and programs and impacted negatively overall success of the year. I said that if that burden was left on the Department of Human Services with their poor staff to execute this program, it would just be a PR exercise for the government, and that's what happened. Because most of the programs that were in fact executed were PR programs. Look at this. Conclusion. Overall, the year of the child had some successes, but not all the objectives were realized. I'd say it's the PR successes that were met, most of them, where they had the expose and the day of prayer and the launching and the things to show that like they're doing something, but they're not really doing it. Firstly, for a product of this magnitude, there should have been more time for planning before the year was even launched. So the Prime Minister heard of a little bit and he spontaneously, knee-jerk reaction, let's just do a year of the child so they'll think we care about children. In addition, given the inadequate staffing of the Division of Human Services and Family Affairs, this agency should not have had the overall responsibility for overseeing the year. Another contributory factor was that ultimately it was one person who was burdened with the coordinating most activities, and there was poor coordination among committees. I said all of that. You'd have sworn that I was the Minister of Human Services at the time I said it. Now your own department is telling you the same thing I said. And I could go on and on about children, about this government's just lack of concern. Year after year after year, you hear about the transitory home for children. Year after year after year, it is in the budget, integrated services and child care program. When I left the ministry, we had identified a building and we were in negotiations with the owner. Don't tell me what happened ever since I left. But nonetheless, yes, I am very happy and I want to congratulate the minister that a home or a building has been identified. Because I intended, honestly, to come here to ask the Prime Minister to kindly give up the PM's residence for the children. I intended to do this.
Which one?
The one up at VG. Yes. Say to a violin with me. To a violin with me. Please, when we're with a pair of players, what I got. I don't want to talk about the Upton Garden Girls Development Center. I don't want to talk about that. Mr. Speaker, because if I have to say the number of times, and mind you, the ideal opportunity to get this project executed once and for all came or presented itself while I was Minister for Home Affairs. Because in that ministry, I had responsibility both for juveniles and for the orphan girls. While I was at the Ministry of Health, I had responsibility for orphan girls, but not juveniles. That was with Home Affairs. So the collaboration and so on for Indian ministry did not allow us to transform the orphan girls center into a juvenile center. But seeing that I had responsibility for both ministries, I thought it was the ideal opportunity. Mr. Speaker? Am I a miserable failure, Mr. Speaker? Do you know, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker will never agree with you. I understand your predicament, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, do you know that year after year in this ministry, I indicated that this was my absolute priority? I did. The members of the government side, I'm sure, will confirm that. Because they ran it in their ears over. Do you know, Mr. Speaker, I will not say this part because I think that, leave it there. But Mr. Speaker, this was on the front. I can justify it. This was on the front burner. We were about to get it approved. They started me and they put it on the back. Mr. Speaker, this was about to be approved. I have ensured that I took it to their consideration. They fired me and they put it aside. Almost as if this project was married with me. They don't want me, so they don't want the project. So, Mr. Speaker, we still do not have the orphan girls where we could convert this into a 24-hour facility to provide immediate safety and a 24-hour facility for girls. We still haven't done it. Mr. Speaker, this government record on children and youth is deplorable. It's deplorable, Mr. Speaker. I mean, I'm the Minister for Youth. It looked like its most important achievement for youth is to say that we enacted in the tour of this government the National Youth Council legislation. A youth policy was tabled here. No discussion at all. They just brought it here and they just left it here. No action on it ever since. And I attended the Youth Month. I have a copy here of the address delivered by the president of the National Youth Council at the opening ceremony of Youth Month for 2005. And Mr. Speaker, would you kindly?
Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the president of the Youth Council basically said to the government that they want immediately for the implementation of this youth policy to be, for a meeting to be convened with the National Council to achieve this. Now, I mean, I am in no position to verify, but I don't believe the president would come for the first time and say in public. I mean, I am assuming, the minister can correct me if I'm wrong, that discussions must have flowed between the NYC and, even if not the minister himself, the ministry which he heads concerning the impertinent policy that just came here. There was allowed no debate on it. It was just tabled. And that was it. And throughout the president's speech, it is very clear that speaking on behalf of you, that they are very, the NYC is very disappointed and is not convinced that the government is taking any serious interest in the youth of this country. After that, I heard another member of the youth community in St. Lucia, a Rastafarian who was on Constitution Park, indicating that his body had been consulted and what have you on the youth policy, and since then they've heard nothing. And he was even saying that maybe what youth have to do is to demonstrate, to express their frustration. Speaker, there's a matter I didn't want, and this is a moving to an entirely different subject matter altogether, but I must deal with it before I take my seat. The speaker, I did not intend to come here and talk about the NCA, to be honest with you. I did not intend to come here and put the Minister for Social Transformation on the spot in this House on this matter. I did not intend to do it. Because what I said to the press outside, I said it. And I intended to come here, and I did not intend to put on the spot. But the Minister for Planning has put the subject matter within the purview of this debate, to the extent that he even wants to criticize me for my comments on the allegations made against the minister in the media. And he wants to suggest that people are wasting time on superfluous matters or matters that are not issues that are more or less dealt with when persons should be discussing the budget. But the NCA scandal affair is about budget, it's about money, and the prudent use of the people's money. That's what it's about. And members on the government side would even want to make a mockery of the fact that the acting chairman of WARN has resigned his position because of certain allegations in the media. I want to say, Mr. Speaker, that the acting chairman of WARN has done an honorable thing. And it's not that he cannot or does not intend to defend the allegations to clear his name, but he has done the honorable thing. This is what the minister ought to do, because the allegations against her are very serious. Very, very serious. I understand that there was a demonstration outside. I understand there was a demonstration outside calling for the resignation of the minister. I wish to advise the minister, as a fellow parliamentarian, that her reputation out there is being questioned by mostly politics. Her reputation out there is being questioned by mostly all of St. Lucia. And as I speak, I want to encourage her to quickly answer the allegations. Because the youth of St. Lucia are watching her very closely and want to take examples. She should take examples from the acting chairman of WARN, who upholds the philosophy and principles of the organization that will form, the party that will form the next government.
Wow.
We will form it because we are prepared to lead by example. We are prepared to lead by example. Accountability. While he is still innocent and intends to clear his name, he will step aside like an honorable man. For fear that because of the philosophy that our party represents. He doesn't want to hamper or hinder our progress for the message we send to the people of St. Lucia about our seriousness, about accountability, and how we will deal with crime. That's the mindset that these members of this Honorable House ought to have. That's why they cannot deal with crime. It starts in the mind. Mama Gaius, people of St. Lucia are watching. Very quickly, Mr. Speaker, I must go to my constituency. And, Mr. Speaker, perhaps unemployment, crime, issues affecting youth are the most burning issues for my constituents. So, I will be brief on other matters, but I am sure my comments on these other issues will satisfy them and will give them a glimmer of hope that there really is help or there really is light at the end of the tunnel. Mr. Speaker, I am happy to see that there is provision in the estimates of expenditure for the relocation of the Conway residents, because I think that this relocation exercise maybe started 15 years ago. Correct me if I'm wrong. And in fact, the people in that community have been living for the past 15 years with a certain degree of instability, uncertainty. For a while, for example, even while I was in government, we wanted to lay down some water pipes, some infrastructure, and the PRS would not invest in a project when it was not sure whether the residents would be moving at any time. So whereas we were able to erect or construct a few footpaths and so, the kind of improvements we wanted to make in that community, we were not able to convince a funding agency to support the project, because there was always the question of, is that community going to exist in its present format in the next 5-10 years? So I think the residents of Conway are relieved that finally there is an allocation in the budget to deal with that issue. Mr. Speaker, they are also very concerned, I know, about the package. They don't want to simply be dropped somewhere. But I know that the Prime Minister, there was an allocation for the infrastructure work, whatever have you. Because what I would like to say about this is that I wish to make a plea that as parliamentary representative, the person who has been elected by the people to represent them, that I am involved in the planning or execution of this activity. Yes, because the people need to have a voice. I know, I have reason, Mr. Speaker, for saying what I'm saying. During the Conway fire, there were meetings upon meetings, and I was never invited. I have to hair up meetings, I have to sneak my way to meetings.
Order, honorable members.
You all have a problem with me to a meeting? I know that there were meetings in the Prime Minister's office with residents, and the very person who has been elected to represent them wasn't there. And they came back and said to me that they naturally assumed that I was going to be there. And then I then heard of another meeting in the Red Cross building, and I sneaked my way. But they told me. But you should have invited me to the first one. Okay.
Honourable Member for Castry Central, please address the chair. Yes, sir. Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, so I'm saying this because I would like to ensure that the interests of my constituents and their welfare is safeguarded, and I want to make sure that they get the best possible representation, and I would like to be invited to these meetings. Mr. Speaker, I also note that there was an allocation of $385,000 for footpaths and drains and even in some cases footpaths to households and so in my constituency. I know that this is the first time there is such a significant level of investment in any one budget in my constituency. $385,000, Mr. Speaker. I suspect that the government is laying the groundwork for their trying to make an entry. I welcome projects for my constituency. In fact, the Mondido project is something that I have taken the PRF there, I can't count how many times. I have taken BNTF there, I can't count how many times. And this is not to diss the PRF. Huh? They've done a lot of good work in my constituency. The BNTF, I find their projects are too slow in coming off the ground. Although granted, this very Mondido project, I received a letter from the BNTF less than 2 months ago, indicating that funds have been approved for that project. So I am hoping that these funds can complement the allocation that has been made in this SMS to ensure that at long last, the people from Black Stars, Mondido and Gavuland can benefit from these initiatives. I spoke about the PRF earlier, Mr. Speaker. There's a lot of work with PRF and stuff, and I must commend. They work very quickly. They are very professional. They demonstrate a genuine concern and care for the community. When they tell you they're going to be there at a certain time and certain day, they are there. They work very quickly. They get involved in the community. They show an interest. They train people in the community. They hold seminars and so. And in most, in fact, all the communities they work in, a community group is set up, and that has benefits lasting even further, because that community group, some of them don't keep up, but others do, and they can then even plan other improvements for their community. And the thing I am most pleased of, Mr. Speaker, which happened in the last quarter, was that finally that road in Georgeville, which I had complained about so very often in this Honorable House, was fixed by the PRF. I am aware too that the Ministry of Communications has done a bit of work there with the drainage and the culverts and so, and the Minister gave me a sheet of what exactly had been done, and I think I am grateful for that, and I want to say on behalf of the... Don't want, Mr. Speaker, they're trying to lure me, because they know they need, Mr. Speaker, they know they need me to win the next election. They know that. But Mr. Speaker, I want to sit in this chair.
All right.
And Mr. Speaker, I wish to say in closing, I want to thank my constituents who have given me overwhelming support, Mr. Speaker. There is nowhere I go in my constituency, Mr. Speaker, that I am not welcomed with open arms. I even had earlier today to invite the member from Hansbury Canaries to take a walk with me in my constituency. I invited him. He's agreed to come. But I think that if he comes, Mr. Speaker, he will have a lot to go and tell the Prime Minister, who will get him ready. So, Mr. Speaker, despite the laughter and the comradeship, I am convinced, I know, that this government is not the government that will take St. Lucia out of the economic and social decadence that exists right now in this country. It is not, Mr. Speaker. And I will have to say, like I said last year, that it's no way, given the record, the poor record of performance of this government, and the wastage of taxpayers' money, I have no confidence that The estimate of expenditure. This $9.4 million that the Prime Minister is asking, I have no confidence that he will prudently $954 million. Okay, the dollars. We have the average amount. That there is no way, Mr. Speaker, that the Prime Minister can successfully, prudently, strategically manage these resources to improve the quality of life for our people. I therefore cannot support this budget. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.